Welcome back to Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena. I'm Jack Llewellyn. Thank you, as always, for joining me. We did not have an episode last week because it was spring break for my daughter, and we took a little road trip. And I will get back to that road trip in just a couple minutes because it leads directly into the topic of the day. But the last episode that we did do talked about the incident at Bravo Ranch and the gun battle that occurred at Bravo Ranch, as well as the discovery of the bodies of Agent Camarena and Captain Zavala Avalon. Some things that I didn't mention in that episode that I should have. First, remember we talked about the anonymous letter that said, hey, you might find him at the Bravo Ranch. I've seen Camarena there. He was inadvertently kidnapped by Bravo. The letter had a Los Angeles address on it, which is interesting. But what else is interesting is it had an incorrect Los Angeles address that looked like a correct address. So in other words, the actual building number for the address that didn't exist, but the street and the basic numbers existed. So if you had, 100 Main Street and 110 Main Street, but no 105 Main Street, if you get a letter that says 105 Main Street, unless you go to Main Street, you may not know that that's not a valid address. No, for a fact, people have tried to locate the address. It does not exist. So that's number one. Number two, remember the guns that were found at Bravo Ranch that allegedly were used by the Bravo family when the shootout occurred? Couple of things. DEA asked several times to be able to look at the guns, inspect the guns, etc., and basically were denied in those efforts. They eventually did receive serial numbers for the guns, but when those serial numbers were checked, they weren't correct serial numbers, which leads to more mystery and maybe makes the conspiracy theories that we had discussed in the episode more valid. The other thing I'll note is I believe some of the DEA agents in the area at the time thought that the guns themselves were guns that had been used by the MFJP or other Mexican government-related officials, and that that's where they ended up after the incident Bravo Ranch as well. So two things we forgot, the Los Angeles address and the guns and the serial numbers. Let's get back to the topic for today. So my daughter and I drove to something called the Royal Gorge in southeastern Colorado or south central Colorado. Beautiful place. Absolutely gorgeous. Look it up on Wikipedia or something. Absolutely beautiful. It's this huge canyon. It's like a very narrow Grand Canyon. And you can take, there's a bridge you can walk across. You can zip line across. There's gondolas, etc. Gorgeous. What's that got to do with Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena? Well, as we drove from our hotel in Colorado Springs to Canyon City and then the Royal Gorge, which is just a little bit outside of Canyon City, we passed Florence, Colorado. Florence, Colorado, perhaps most notably known for being the location of ADX Supermax. So we're driving by. I could see the complex. I said to my daughter, please, wave over there, wave to El Chapo as we go by. And then on the way back to our hotel after spending some time at the Royal Gorge, we drove around the prison complex, actually took a wrong turn kind of into a back entryway and had to make a quick U-turn when we realized we were not where we wanted to be. But I started thinking, we've heard a lot about Supermax. We know El Chapo's there. How much do we really know about Supermax? Maybe it's a nice episode to talk about Supermax, its history, what actually is there, and some of the other folks who are or have been housed there. And then also look at some of the complaints that have been levied against the prison itself, including those from El Chapo. So that's what we're going to do today. Supermax itself, and you can find lots of information. Bureau of Prisons has information. Once El Chapo was there, lots of news articles from different places. So you can find this information fairly easily. But Supermax is, and it's actually classified as a Supermax, or what they call a control unit prison. That is a prison that provides a higher and more controlled level of custody than a high security prison. And a high security prison is what you would call a maximum security prison. Right? You and I, common language, common day speak, might call it maximum security. Federal prisons call it high security. Supermax is one level above that. The genesis for Supermax comes from an incident that occurred October 22, 1983, when two members of the Aryan Brotherhood, Silverstein, and Clayton Fountain, stabbed two correctional officers at the United States Penitentiary, Marion, killed both of those officers. The perception was that because these two events took place only a couple of hours apart, the cause was inadequate security, inadequate prison design. Interestingly enough, U.S. prison Marion went into a lockdown and basically stayed in lockdown for 23 years and served basically as a model for what Supermax would become. That is a control unit prison. The Supermax idea was advocated by Federal Bureau of Prisons Director Norman Carlson. And it's said that he said that Supermax would hold criminals who were desperate enough to murder corrections officers or other inmates in the hopes of being sentenced to death. He argued that as draconian as these measures were, they were the only way to deal with inmates who have absolutely no concern for human life. Florence opened in January of 1995. It actually opened on January 10th, 1995. I find that interesting because January in Florence, Colorado can be very cold, very snowy, and very windy. The county itself had nine prisons. In fact, the main state penitentiary is just a couple miles down the road across the highway in Canyon City. But the Florence Complex and Supermax were going to provide about 750 to 900 permanent jobs plus construction, etc. So the residents actually raised about $160,000 to purchase 600 acres for the new prison complex. The complex itself cost about $60 million to build, was designed by two architecture firms from nearby Colorado Springs. And as I said, it's located in Florence, Colorado. It's called the Alcatraz of the Rockies. That's what it's referred to. And I want to give you a good sense of it. Florence is a little bit out in the middle of nowhere, but it's not completely. Again, Canyon City's just a couple of miles down the road where the Supermax facility, all of the Florence prison facilities. If you go right across the highway, there's a large truck stop area with an Arby's and a convenience store. And you can stand right there and look at the facilities and take pictures, et cetera. You can't get a whole lot closer on the other side of the road. So what I'm trying to say is it's isolated, but it's not quite as isolated as you might think. And it's not quite as isolated as some other places that I've been to. I don't view it as isolated as, for example, Pelican Bay in California. Nevertheless, that's what it's referred to. We're going to talk about this a little bit more. But when inmates first arrive at the prison, they're kept in what they call administrative segregation. And that means they're kept in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day. They're allowed 1 hour outside their cell each day, which can occur at any time, day or night. And when they're outside, they're kept under restraint. That is handcuffed, shackled, or both. The hour outside of the cell is for exercise. I love that. I'm not really sure how you exercise when you're handcuffed and or shackled, but be that as it may. And they also may be entitled to a phone call if they've earned the privilege. It's also said that their diets are restricted to ensure that the food cannot be used to harm themselves or to create unhygienic conditions in their cells. Some cells have showers, which is designed to further reduce the amount of handling inmates inmates that correctional officers have to perform. Generally speaking, after a year or so, depending on their conduct, and in some cases, depending upon their flight risk, I'm looking at you, El Chapo, inmates are gradually allowed outside their cell for longer periods of time. The long-term goal is said to keep an inmate at the Florence facility for no more than 3 years and then transfer them to a less restrictive prison where they can serve their sentences. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Obviously, that doesn't happen with all of the inmates. And we'll talk about some people who've been in Supermax for quite a while. The idea, there was a report in the San Francisco Chronicle way back in 1998 that said the main purpose of the Florence facility was to try and extract reasonably peaceful behavior from extremely violent career prisoners. I'm going to say that again. Try and extract reasonably peaceful behavior from extremely violent career prisoners. All right, the facility itself, as of about a week ago, had approximately 327 inmates. They're all male inmates. There is not a female supermax, though there is a designated facility for kind of the most, the riskiest of the female prisoners in the prison system. There are six levels. We can talk about that in just a second as well. Capacity is about 474 inmates. It's never been at full capacity. I mentioned this just a minute ago, but just to give you an idea of where Florence is. So Florence is about 100 miles south of Denver, about 40 miles south of Colorado Springs. Supermax itself is part of that federal correctional complex, which has three facilities, each with a different security rating. All right. The Supermax facility has six security levels. There are four within the general population. There is a special security unit. There is a control unit or a transitional unit. There's actually two of those. They're called Kilo and Joker units. And then there is something called Range 13, and I'll explain those in just a second. The security levels correspond to the inmates who occupy those particular levels. So, for example, the control unit, that's the Kilo and Joker units, houses inmates who have committed serious misconduct at other institutions or acts of violence at other institutions. It also houses kind of high-level members of organizations that are deemed to be threats. The most common example of that are prison gangs. There are the special security unit, which is called the H unit. Those are members of terror groups. We'll talk about those in just a minute. And then there's this Range 13, which is a special four-cell wing within the special housing unit. It is designated for those that need the highest level of control. I only have information going back to 2022, but apparently there are only three people who've been incarcerated in that unit. And you have Thomas Silverstein, who again was the Aryan Brotherhood person who at USP Marion murdered the prisons officer. He was one of the first residents in Supermax. So he went into the Range 13 unit, at least until just before his death, when he was transferred to a facility in Lakewood, Colorado, which was more for his medical issues than it was because of a degrading of his standing as a prisoner worthy of tighter and stricter control. Then you have Ramzi Youssef, who is a terrorist. He was convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, which, if you remember, killed six people, injured more than 1,000. He had a couple of other plots that he was convicted of. So he's in Range 13. And then the third resident of Range 13 is El Chapo himself, in part because of his history of escaping in Mexico. And we'll talk about that in just a second as well. There are two intermediate units at Supermax, which are called step-down units. Those are inmates who can earn transfer to another institution if they stay on good behavior. In these step-down units, these two intermediate units, these are the only places in the entire facility where inmates secure themselves in their own cells. They can walk freely in their area, and they can associate with other inmates. They traditionally get transferred first to the step-down unit at the Florence High Security Prison, and then oftentimes go from there to other facilities within the U.S. prison system. Okay. A couple of other things to talk about in the daily life of a prisoner there. The prison itself is 7x12-foot concrete cell. It is absolutely soundproof, so inmates can't communicate with one another. It's equipped with basic necessities, a bed, a desk, a chair, all of which are made of concrete and attached to the walls. It's said that El Chapo's cell is one of the ones that has a toilet and a shower area. The shower area, however, it has a time control on the water system to avoid flooding. You know, you flood the cell, you get prison guards happen to come in, etc. They don't do that at all. electricity in the cells is controlled by the guards. So at a certain time, there's no access to light. This cell itself has two doors. One is a solid outer door and then an interior jail door. The cell has a tiny window, 42 inches tall, 4 inches wide. There is no view of the mountains. The idea is that the visibility, the restricted visibility, prevents prisoners from knowing their exact location within the facility. The 1 hour of recreation time, listen to this, you get 1 hour of recreation time. It can be day or night. It's in a concrete pit that looks like an empty swimming pool, basically. Generally speaking, there are three guards at any time when someone is in this recreation area. Is that allowed? Prisoners are allowed to walk around for exercise. But it is said that this exercise concrete pit allows for 10 steps in a straight line or 31 steps in a circle. It, as with the window in the cells, is designed so that inmates do not have a view of their whereabouts in the prison. So if you were to try to escape, you wouldn't even know where you were, let alone how to try and get out. I want to talk a little bit about others who have been or are at Supermax. You know, we hear about El Chapo, but there's been a lot of others. One thing to note, and we'll talk about this when we talk about some of the controversy, there have been at least 8 suicides at the prison. The last one was in November of 2017. There are a couple of famous prior inmates. Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, was housed at Supermax prior to his execution. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, also was at Supermax for many years. He actually was transferred to a federal prison in North Carolina, again, for health reasons, and that's where he passed away. There are some names that you've heard of at Supermax to this day. You've got Zacharias Massawi, who was a Al-Qaeda operative. He played a key role in the September 11 attacks. If you remember, he helped the hijackers obtain flight lessons, money, material, etc. He's there. We said Ramzi Youssef is still there. Abu Hamza al-Masari, if you remember that name, he is an Egyptian cleric, former associate of Osama bin Laden. He was convicted of a variety of offenses, including kidnapping Westerners in Yemen and conspiring to establish a training camp in Oregon. All three of those are serving at least one life sentence. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, remember him? He is also there. He is serving 3 consecutive life sentences plus 110 years. If you remember, Richard Pryor has a great routine about being in a federal penitentiary in Arizona when they were filming Stir Crazy. And he talks about somebody who had life sentence plus more years, which is kind of funny. So if you get a chance, look that up. It's humorous. There are dozens of other domestic or foreign terrorists who are still in Supermax. Most of them are people you wouldn't know, but they include, you know, someone here who was the spokesman for Al-Qaeda and son-in-law of Osama bin Laden. You've got someone who was a co-founder of Al-Qaeda and advisor to Osama bin Laden. just a large number. I mean, it really is incredibly shocking, the number of people who were there and the things that occurred. It's scary, frankly. There are also some domestic terrorists. You have, and I can't pronounce the first name, but Tsarnaev, the Boston Marathon bomber, is housed here. He is has had his death sentence reimposed by the U.S. Supreme Court March of 2022, but he has not been executed yet. He's there. Terry Nichols is there. He is serving 161 consecutive life sentences. He, of course, was a conspirator along with Timothy McVeigh for the Oklahoma City bombing. Jose Padilla, who was an Al-Qaeda operative and one of the first U.S. citizens designated as an enemy combatant after September 11, he's only serving a 21-year sentence. He's scheduled to be released in July of 2026. Eric Rudolph, remember him? He was a member of a Christian extremist group, Army of God. He was responsible for several bombings in the Southeast, including the bombings at the Centennial Olympic Park in Atlanta. And then there are, again, a whole host of domestic terrorist-type prisoners that are there, many of whom I'd never heard of, but many of whom, frankly, scared the hell out of me. There are some who are there on espionage. Perhaps the most famous prisoner for espionage was Robert Hansen. He died relatively recently at Supermax. If you don't remember, he was the FBI agent who was charged with finding out who the mole was working with the Russians, and he actually was investigating to try and find himself. And he eventually got caught, but he was, I think it probably is still regarded as the or one of the most successful double agents in the history of American intelligence agencies. There's also a couple of people here that I think are interesting that I'll just share with you. There's one here, Noshir Gawadia. He is serving a 32-year sentence scheduled for release in 2032. He was a engineer for the U.S. Department of Defense and said to have been one of the principal designers of the B-2 stealth bomber. He was convicted in 2011 of using classified information to assist China in producing cruise missiles with stealth technology. There's another one here serving a life sentence, Walter Myers. He was an intelligence analyst for the Department of State. He pled guilty to conspiracy to commit espionage by providing classified U.S. national defense information to Cuba over a period of 30 years. 30. As you can imagine, there are also some pretty famous names from the world of organized crime. James Marcello, who was the front man for the Chicago Outfit. He is serving a life sentence there. Tyler Bingham, one of the founders of the Aryan Brotherhood prison gang, is there. Larry Hoover, not the one from Animal House, leader of the Gangster Disciples in Chicago. He is serving 6 consecutive life sentences. And then there's, again, a whole host of others that you probably wouldn't know. And then to our topic, there are a few cartel-related inmates. El Chapo, of course, is there. He is serving a life sentence, plus 30 years. He was found guilty in February 2019. He was sentenced to life imprisonment in July 2019. We'll talk a little bit more about him. Alfredo Beltran Leyva is also serving there. He has been in the prison since 2017 as well. Remember the blood feud between the BLO and CDS, particularly El Chapo. And I find it ironic that now Alfredo Beltran Leyva and El Chapo are incarcerated in the same facility. Again, a whole host of other names that you could look up. You know, there's some bad, bad, bad people there. So that's the folks that are there. What are some things that have happened as far as complaints with respect to Supermax? There were a couple of lawsuits that were filed in the early to mid 2000s. One in particular, Cunningham versus the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Sorry, that was a class action lawsuit. Basically, it alleged chronic abuse at Supermax, but more importantly, that there was a systematic failure to diagnose and treat prisoners who were mentally ill. And they were actually represented by the firm of Arnold and Porter in Washington, D.C., very well-known, well-respected firm. Under Bureau of Prison Standards and Regulations, Supermax is not permitted to hold prisoners who are mentally ill. And as a result of this action, which actually proceeded quite a long ways, the parties entered into a settlement that was signed off on by Judge Mache, the U.S. District Court in Colorado. The settlement included additional mental health screening, more access by medical professionals, particularly mental health professionals. There was also a lifting of the ban on psychotropic medicine in the control unit of the prison. There were also agreements to have better training on recognizing and responding to mental illness. As a result of the lawsuit, it said the lawsuit was actually settled in 2016. About 100 prisoners were diagnosed with mental illnesses and transferred to other facilities. There is a name that I was not aware of, who is an inmate at Supermax by the name of Marco Paredes Machado. In July of 2022, he pled guilty to distributing more than 2,200 pounds of marijuana for the Sinaloa cartel. He sued the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons, and said that he was being subjected to overly harsh Supermax prison conditions and solitary confinement because he refused to provide intelligence. And the complaint that he filed said, and I quote, "No similarly situated cartel member under the jurisdiction of the BOP has received the notorious designation that Mr. Paredes Machado received. No plaza pass has been shipped off to ADX. Mr. Paredes Machado constitutes a class of one, singled out for draconian punishment for no other purpose than to coerce him into speaking to the United States government." In the complaint, he also compared his role as a plaza boss for the cartel to that of a regional distribution manager, and that the U.S. government, again, targeted him for access to organizational information. There, some more information about Machado or Paredes Machado that it probably isn't necessary here, but one of the other allegations is that Bureau of Prisons falsely claimed that Paredes Machado had pledged allegiance to ISIS and had an ISIS tattoo on his back. And because of his allegiance and affiliation with ISIS, he posed a threat to others, which then justified his transfer to ADX Supermax, which in his complaint he says was not true and was simply a subterfuge to get him to Supermax, where he could be further extorted to give information. El Chapo, we've talked about this a couple of times. El Chapo has complained several times about his conditions at Supermax, which I find a little bit humorous. Big bad cartel leader complaining, though having read some of this about Supermax, maybe I understand. I will note, I want to point this out real quick. There was a 60 Minutes crew that was able to get into Supermax in 2007. And one of the producers said that the prison had an astonishing and eerie quiet. And he says further, a few minutes inside that cell and 2 hours inside Supermax were enough to remind me why I left high school a year early. The walls closed in very fast. So 2021, El Chapo submits an affidavit to the U.S. court where he was convicted, claiming that his physical health and mental well-being suffered due to the isolation being imposed upon him. I have suffered a lot due to the treatment at Supermax. I now suffer from headaches, memory loss, muscle cramps, stress, and depression. I have suffered a lot. In January 2023, apparently, El Chapo was able to get an SOS message, as one of his attorneys described it, to President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, again saying that he was suffering psychological torment. And at that time, AMLO said he would, quote, consider a request by El Chapo to return from the United States to complete his sentence on humanitarian grounds. Never was mentioned anywhere how in the world that would actually occur. Nevertheless, that's what was said. In the summer of 2023, he again complained. He made a series of affidavits that went back to the district court, again complaining about his time at Supermax. Several reports came out then and said, yikes, this is El Chapo plotting an escape, because the last time he complained about conditions at Altiplano prison in Mexico was right before he escaped. Other experts have said, yeah, that's not really going to happen. Nobody's broken out of Supermax since it opened. Nobody's even been close. So we'll see about that. But point is, he's continuing to complain, or he is continuing to complain about conditions there. He also says that he's not able to get documents and meet with his attorneys enough. And the last thing is, he said, I feel like everything is being done to me consciously and in bad faith against me. Anyways, that's what's going on with El Chapo. And I was actually talking to a former DEA agent today, talking about a video Guzman, and wondering if it ever might come to pass that Ovidio would also be housed at Supermax. That, of course, requires him being convicted of the charges that he's facing at this time. All right, that's our brief history of Supermax. I hope you found that kind of interesting. I spent some time looking at, again, the prisoners there, and I'll go back to the Richard Pryor line, and he says, he said something to the effect of, you know, he wanted to really get to know them, get to know the brothers who were in prison unfairly. And he says, and I got to know them. I met with them, and thank God we have penitentiaries. There's some bad, bad people there. And, you know, it reminds me just too of the fact that so much police work on a federal, state level gets done without anybody really knowing it. And yet you've got these people, you know, domestic and foreign terrorists who are in prison. And we're thankful they are. That is it for today. Remember, episodes are going out on Friday nights now. Look for that. Look for the newsletter on Sunday mornings. We've got a couple of other things coming up in the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure what the order is going to be yet. So it'll be a surprise next week when you tune in. Thank you again for listening. And that is Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena for this week. Take care, everyone.